Welcome to the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for December 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. In this month's Corporate Restructuring Review, we'll discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filing and other statistics. Second, large Chapter 11 filings TCR editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of the major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. Fourth, reminders about debtors who emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you're unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now, let's review the largest Chapter 11 cases in 2011. Danilo Muñez reports that the number of Chapter 11 cases with assets in excess of $100 million declined by 22% to 83 in 2011, compared to 106 in 2010. For the month of December 2011, five companies filed for Chapter 11 protection with assets in excess of $100 million, including one company that listed total assets in excess of $1 billion. The mega case filings in December snapped to an increasing trend of large cases for the second half of 2011. There were eight filings in November, 10 in October, seven each in September, in August, and four in July. The average number of mega cases in 2011 is about seven per month, compared to about nine per month in 2010. The largest Chapter 11 filing for December 2011 was by publisher Lee Enterprises, which listed total assets of $1.15 billion as of the bankruptcy petition date. For fiscal year 2011, eight companies sought Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection with assets in excess of $1 billion. Aside from Lee Enterprises, the other companies are AMR Corporation, Dingy Holdings LLC, General Maritime Corp, MF Global Holdings Incorporated, New Page Corporation, Borders Group, and MSR Resort Golf Course. Davenport, Iowa-based Lee Enterprises, which publishes the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the Arizona Daily Star, along with more than 40 other newspapers and about 300 weeklies, filed December 12, 2012, with the bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware. Judge Kevin Gross oversees the case. Lee Enterprise disclosed total assets of $1.15 billion and total liabilities of $1.25 billion at September 25, 2011. Prior to commencing its Chapter 11 cases, Lee Enterprises solicited and obtained support from lenders and noteholders of an amended joint prepackaged plan of reorganization dated December 2, 2011. The company is seeking confirmation of the plan at a hearing January 23, 2012. The plan is designed to provide full payment to all creditors. The second largest Chapter 11 filing was by Newport Beach, California-based William Lyon Homes and its subsidiaries, which are primarily engaged in designing, constructing, and selling single-family detached and attached homes in California, Arizona, and Nevada. William Lyon Homes and its affiliates commenced a prepackaged Chapter 11 reorganization with the bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware on December 19, 2011, before Judge Christopher S. Sanchi. The petition says assets are $593.5 million, with debts totaling $606.6 million as of September 30, 2011. William Lyon had been pursuing an out-of-court restructuring since January of 2011. The reorganization plan announced in November will reduce debt on borrowed money from $510 million to $328 million. The home builder intends to obtain approval of the bankruptcy plan at a hearing beginning February 10, 2012. The Chapter 11 plan already has been accepted by 97% in amount and 93% in a number of senior unsecured notes, the company said in a court filing. Equipment rental company Ahern Rental Incorporated commenced the third largest Chapter 11 case on December 22, 2011, with the bankruptcy court for the District of Nevada before Judge Bruce T. Beasley. Ahern Rental estimated $500 million to $1 billion in assets and debts. The filing was promoted after Ahern Rental filed to extend the maturity of its revolving credit facility, which had a maturity date of August 21, 2011. Delta Petroleum Corporation, an independent oil and gas company engaged primarily in their exploration for and the acquisition, development, production, and sale of natural gas and crude oil, filed for Chapter 11 protection on December 16, 2011, disclosing $375 million, $498,248 in assets, and $310,678,157 in liabilities. Delta and seven of its subsidiaries filed in the District of Delaware roughly 6 weeks before the January 31, 2012 scheduled maturity of its $38.5 million secured credit facility with Macquarie Bank Limited, and after several months of unsuccessful attempts to sell the business. Clare Oaks, operators of a namesake continuing care retirement community in Bartlett, Illinois, sought Chapter 11 protection with the Bankruptcy Court for the Northern District of Illinois on December 5, 2011. Judge Pamela S. Hollis oversees the case. In its petition, Clare Oaks estimated $100 million to $500 million in assets and debts. Of the bankruptcy mega cases in December 2011, two out of five were prepackaged Chapter 11 cases, reversing the downward trend of prepackaged bankruptcy the past 6 months. There was only one prepackaged bankruptcy filing the previous 5 months, despite the rising number of bankruptcy mega cases in the second half of 2011. For 2011, 13 of the 83 mega cases involved a prepackaged Chapter 11 plan as of the petition date, or about 16% of the large Chapter 11 filings. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 35 prepackaged or prearranged cases were filed out of the 106 bankruptcy mega cases, or about one in every three filings in 2010. The bankruptcy mega cases for the month of December were dispersed throughout different industries, one each in information, mining, construction, rental and leasing, and healthcare. For 2011, the manufacturing industry has the most Chapter 11 mega cases, with 14, followed by the accommodations and food services industry with 12, financing and insurance with 9, information with 8, and retail trade and real estate with 7 each. The rest were dispersed throughout different industries. Of the December mega cases, there were filed in Delaware, and one each was filed in Nevada and the Northern District of Illinois. For 2011, the Delaware Bankruptcy Court continued to be favored by the bankruptcy mega cases, with 38 filings, or 46% of the mega cases, followed by the Southern District of New York with 16 filings, or 19% of the mega cases, and by the Northern District of Texas with 4 filings, or 5% of the mega cases. The rest of the bankruptcy mega cases are spread evenly throughout the various bankruptcy courts. Lehman Brothers Holdings Corporation remains the biggest corporation bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, had $639 billion in total assets and $619 billion in total debts at the time of filing. Now, let's turn to the topic of large Chapter 11 filings troubled company reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Carlo Fernandez identified 6 companies that may be close to filing for bankruptcy. These are Achelix Holdings, Catalyst Paper, Quiznos Corp., AGY Holding, Residential Capital, and Eastman Kodak. Achelix Holdings, LLC, on December 15th, did not make a $12.5 million scheduled interest payment under its $225 million 11.125% senior unsecured bonds. At the end of December, the provided of maintenance and repairs solution to the energy industry said it reached an agreement with 100% of the holders for the first lien and second lien debt and 92% of the note holders. Under the deal, debt would be reduced by 71% or $322 million. The restructuring transaction, which is expected to be complete in late January to mid-February, contemplates, number one, the restructuring of $130 million first lien term loan with financial covenants reset. Number two, second lien debt will be converted to preferred equity. And three, holders of senior notes will exchange their notes for 33% of the equity or reorganize Achelix. All trade creditors will be paid in full. In the event that the exchange offer conditions are not met, the company will commence a voluntary filing under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code. Affiliates of Centerbridge Partners LP would become the controlling shareholder of Achelix following the transaction. Achelix had assets of $400 million against liabilities $500 million as of September 30, 2011. Net loss was $27.5 million on $320 million of revenue in the 9 months ended September 30, 2011. Catalyst Paper Corp. said December 15th that it will defer interest payments of U.S. $21 million on $110 U.S. million and $280 U.S. million of 11% senior secured notes due December 2016. The Richmond, British Columbia-based manufacturer of specialty mechanical printing papers, newsprint, and pulp had assets of $1.45 billion Canadian dollars and debts of $1.31 billion Canadian dollars as of September 30, 2011. The company said it had deferred the payment while it reviews alternatives to address its capital structure. Discussions are ongoing with certain holders of the company's 2016 notes and holders of U.S. $250 million outstanding 7.375% senior notes due 2014. Catalyst said operations will continue as usual. Catalyst first announces plans to pursue a restructuring of its balance sheet in June. Perella Weinberg Partners serves as the company's financial advisor. Denver, Colorado-based Quiznos Corporation has reached an agreement with majority of its secured lenders and Avenue Capital for a financial restructuring through an exchange offer. Avenue Capital will become majority shareholder after the deal is completed. The company will file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy if the exchange offer is not completed. Quiznos, operator of the quick-serve restaurant chains and pioneer of the toasted sandwich, said the deal provides for a consensual financial restructuring plan that reduced the company's current debt substantially and provide an infusion of $150 million of new equity capital to help position Quiznos for future growth. The proposed transaction provides for Avenue Capital, an investment firm that currently holds a significant amount of the company's first and second lien debt, to become the majority's owner of the company through a $150 million equity infusion and the conversion of debt to equity. Avenue's equity funding will be used to reinvest in the business and retire a portion of the company's first lien debt. Quiznos has entered into a restructuring support agreement with parties representing 75.1% of its first lien loans and 72.8% of its second lien loans. Under terms of the proposed exchange offer, the holders of roughly $650 million in first lien loans will be repaid $75 million in cash and will extend the maturity of the balance of their loans until the 5-year anniversary of the closing of the restructuring. All first lien lenders will be given the opportunity to exchange an aggregate of roughly $200 million of the first lien debt for new second lien debt on a pro rata basis if they so desire. As part of the exchange offer, certain lenders have already agreed to exchange approximately $150 million of their existing first lien loans for new second lien loans. Holders of roughly $225 million of second lien loans will exchange their loans for a pro rata share of 40% of the new equity of reorganized Quiznos. The closing of the exchange offer is conditioned upon, among other considerations, 100% of the aggregate principal amount of the first and second lien loans being validly tendered and not withdrawn. In addition, in order to consummate the out-of-court exchange offer, the company is seeking significant concessions for certain other creditors, including certain former executives of the company, certain landlords, and certain former area developers. As an alternative to the exchange offer, the company will simultaneously commence a solicitation of acceptances of a prepackaged plan of reorganization to implement a restructuring pursuant to a voluntary case under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. The company would make a voluntary Chapter 11 filing only if it does not receive tenders of 100% of the first and second lien holders or does not satisfy other conditions to closing, including sufficient concessions from certain other creditors and certain landlords. The terms of the prepackaged Chapter 11 plan would provide less favorable treatment for the lenders and certain other creditors and landlords than under the proposed out-of-court exchange offer. Quiznos financial advisor is Moelis & Company, and legal advisor is Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton & Garrison, LLP. Vinson & Elkins, LLP, is acting as the company's financial counsel. AGY Holding Corporation, at the end of the year, had seen its CEO leave the post, its operating performance further deteriorating, and Standard & Poor's and Moody's providing further downgrades to junk territory. In announcing the exit of Douglas Matchek as CEO, AGY Holdings said Alvarez & Marcel is providing interim managers, an interim CEO, and an interim executive vice president of operations. The producer of fiberglass yarns and high-strength fiberglass reinforcements used in composites applications has reported a net loss of $21.10 million on $141.54 million of net sales for the 9 months ending September 30, 2011, following a net loss of $14.57 million on $183.67 million of net sales for the year ended December 31, 2010. Net loss in 2009 was $93.51 million. The company's balance sheet as of September 30, 2011 showed $294.72 million in total assets and $288.21 million in total liabilities. S&P, which cut the company's corporate rating to CCC-, said, "Our rating action reflects our view that AGY's credit quality has deteriorated due to the ongoing weakness in its operating performance, a decline in liquidity, and the potential for insufficient liquidity to meet interest payments in 2012. As of September 30, 2011, S&P points out AGY reported total liquidity of $17 million, including $16.2 million of availability under its unrated revolving credit facility. AGY reported that it expected liquidity to decline to levels of around $12.4 million in November following the payment of nearly $10 million in semi-annual interest on its notes. It also expects effective availability to be lower than the reported figures because the company is also subject to a fixed charge coverage ratio covenant if availability under its revolving credit facility declines to below $6.25 million. ResCap's financial trouble and talks about the mortgage lender's potential bankruptcy filing has been ongoing for years. The Wall Street Journal reported in November that Ally Financial Incorporated, formerly owned by General Motors Corporation, has been considering whether to put its RESCAP business into bankruptcy in an effort to resolve its mortgage woes. According to a recent report, sources told New York Post that Ally Bank will not force RESCAP unit into bankruptcy as part of the restructuring of its troubled mortgage subsidiary, as that would put the entire bank at risk. There has been a lot of interaction between Ally and RESCAP, making it hard to argue that RESCAP is a completely separate entity and that Ally is not responsible for claims, a source said. The New York Post reported that RESCAP owes Ally more than $1.2 billion in April. RESCAP also must have $250 million of net worth to meet loan covenants, and a debt investor said it would likely fall below that amount in the coming weeks. So Ally, which took $17 billion in taxpayers' bailouts, likely needs to invest more in RESCAP to keep it solvent, the investor said, according to the Post. The Journal said in November that Ally has hired Kirkland & Ellis, an investment bank, Evercore Partners Incorporated, on a possible restructuring of RESCAP. In November 2011, Standard & Poor's rating services lowered its long-term counterparty credit rating on RESCAP to CCC from B+, and Fitch Ratings cut its long-term issuer default rating on RESCAP to CCC from B. In December 2011, Dominion Bond Rating Services affirmed its issuer and long-term debt rating of RESCAP to C. Fitch cited the deteriorating year-to-date operating performance magnified by a $442 million net loss reported in its third fiscal quarter, significant reduction in the tangible net worth covenant cushion, and uncertainty regarding future capital financial support from Ally. Fitch said RESCAP is close to violating the $250 million minimum tangible net worth covenant. It posted $331 million in the third quarter of 2011 from $772 million in the second quarter of 2011 and $846 million at December 31, 2010, required under its credit facilities and servicing agreement with a GSE. According to Mr. Fernandez, Eastman Kodak Company could be the year's first billion-dollar bankruptcy filer. The Wall Street Journal, cited people familiar with the matter, reported that Eastman Kodak is preparing bankruptcy filing at the end of January or early February, should efforts to solve a trove of digital patents fall through. Sources told the Journal that Kodak is in discussion with potential lenders for around $1 billion in so-called debtor-in-possession financing that would keep it afloat during bankruptcy proceedings. According to the Journal, people familiar with the matter said Kodak is in discussion with large banks including J.P. Morgan, Chase & Company, Citigroup Incorporated, and Wells Fargo & Company for those funds. Kodak has also held discussions with bondholders about a bankruptcy financing package, the people said. Another hedge fund that doesn't hold Kodak debt, Cerberus Capital Management, LP, has also held talks with Kodak on behalf of a group willing to provide the financing, people said. If it files for bankruptcy, Kodak will try to sell its portfolio of 1,100 patents through a court-supervised bankruptcy auction. Kodak's balance sheet at September 30, 2011, showed $5.10 billion in total assets and $6.75 billion in total liabilities. In July 2011, the company announced that it is exploring strategic alternatives, including a potential sale related to its digital imaging patent portfolios. Kodak hired Jones Day as legal advisor and investment bank Lazard Limited, but denied rumors it was filing for bankruptcy. It also enlisted FTI Consulting Incorporated. In December, Kodak hired Sullivan & Cromwell's restructuring practice, replacing Jones Day. The group of Kodak bondholders has formed an informal committee and hired law firm Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Field, LLP, for advice. In addition to the challenged companies Mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the troubled company reporter provides ongoing reporting about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheet in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a free trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in three Chapter 11 cases that troubled company reporter editors monitor day by day. Ivy Magdadero reports that another major dispute in the Lehman Brothers case has been added to two existing disputes with major banks. The recent dispute is over an alleged Archstone deal contract breach. The other two disputes are with London-based Barclays PLC and the New York-based J.P. Morgan Chase. Lehman Brothers Holding Incorporated sued Bank of America Corp. and Barclays PLC for breach of contract after two banks agreed to sell their 26.5% stake in apartment landlords Archstone's to Sam Zell's Equity Residential and granted the Chicago-based company an option to buy the second half of their stake in Archstone for $1.33 billion or more. In a December 15th lawsuit filed in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Manhattan, Lehman sought to clarify the terms of its rights to buy the Archstone stake to make Bank of America and Barclays carry out their obligations under agreements in place and to postpone deadlines for the purchase. Lehman is seeking an injunction that would stop Bank of America and Barclays from completing any transfer to Zell's company. It also seeks to divest the companies of their voting rights in Archstone and to recover damages and legal fees from them. Lehman told the two banks that if it would buy half of their stake in Archstone for $1.33 billion, Lehman said its original agreement with the two banks gave it until January 23rd to get court approval for its purchase, make a $66 million deposit, and complete the deal by paying out the balance of $1.33 billion. Lehman is complaining that Bank of America and Barclays have been negotiating for months on selling their Archstone stake, but failed to provide information about the sale process on a regular basis and in a commercially reasonable manner. Bankruptcy Judge James Peck on December 21st told Lehman to sit down with the two banks and resolve their $1.3 billion dispute over the Archstone stake. The judge said Lehman should be holding business meetings with the banks, not suing them. Archstone, which Lehman acquired in a $22 billion leverage buyout with Tishman Speyer Properties LP, has ownership interest in hundreds of apartment developments from Washington to New York to San Francisco. Lehman is seeking to sell Archstone, its biggest real estate assets, for $6 billion to help pay creditors with claims of about $370 billion, but must first gain control of the company, according to the person familiar with the plan. Meanwhile, Lehman's other legal battle with Barclays in relation to the London-based bank's purchase of Lehman Broker Business is not showing signs of coming to an end soon, as the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission sided with Lehman in the $3 billion dispute with Barclays over assets, saying Lehman didn't have enough money to pay customers. The SEC voiced its opinion in a December 23rd filing with a Manhattan court. The trustee liquidating the Lehman Broker unit said he identified a $5 billion shortfall in customer reserve accounts. The SEC related in its filing that as long as there's a shortfall, Barclays only has a conditional claim on as much as $1.3 billion in reserve. Unit trustee James Giddens both appealed Judge Peck's ruling that gave Barclays only a conditional right to $769 million in the reserve account unless Mr. Giddens had enough to pay customers. In addition to the $769 million, reserves including $507 million in margin for customer transactions at Options Clearing Corp., the SEC said. Judge Peck told Barclays in February 2011, ruling to return $2 billion in margin assets to Lehman, and he told Mr. Giddens to give Barclays at least $1.1 billion in clearance assets. Both sides file court papers on December 23rd in support of their appeals. The appeals are expected to be decided by Judge Richard J. Howell of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York in February. As to Lehman's $8.6 billion fight with J.P. Morgan, U.S. District Judge Richard Sullivan said he will defer a decision on whether the lawsuit belongs in the district court. The judge said on December 30th that a federal bankruptcy judge must first rule on J.P. Morgan's move to dismiss the case. New York-based J.P. Morgan is fighting a lawsuit by Lehman that alleges the lender helped cause the failed bank's 2008 collapse by demanding $8.6 billion in collateral. J.P. Morgan is also defending $6 billion in acting properly in seeking securities for loans made during the credit crisis. Washington Mutual, the biggest bank to fail in U.S. history, said on December 12th it reached a settlement in a dispute between shareholders and certain creditors that had been blocking a bankruptcy exit plan valued at more than $7 billion. The agreement, brokered by a court-appointed mediator, calls for noteholders to contribute $75 million to the only unit of WaMu that will exit bankruptcy, as well as loan the entity $125 million. The reorganized company would be owned by preferred and common shareholders. Judge Mary Walrath must approve the new settlement. Details of the agreement were filed as part of a new version of the company's reorganization plan, the seventh amended plan version, which must also be approved before creditors can be paid. The bankruptcy plan also includes a three-way settlement deal aimed at resolving billion-dollar lawsuits among WaMu, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and J.P. Morgan Chase. The deal provides for the dismissal of lawsuits and the distribution of assets among the parties. WaMu's banking business was sold by FDIC to J.P. Morgan for $1.88 billion in 2008. Soon after the sale, a legal battle among the parties began on who owned what part of the failed bank. Meanwhile, on December 28th, court filing, holders of a $1.5 billion in WaMu Trust preferred securities scheduled a January 11th hearing where they plan to ask the bankruptcy judge to halt the process of confirming WaMu's latest bankruptcy plan. In Tribune Company, no final resolution is in sight on the disputes among creditors over the company's 2007 leverage buyout, as bankruptcy judge Kevin Carey in Delaware said a confirmation hearing in the case is not likely to take place until May. Many of the disputes related to the leverage buyout include alleged fraudulent conveyance claims. Tribune creditors have even filed formal lawsuits in late 2010 to hold Tribune executives, including Sam Zell, and lenders liable for any fraudulent transfers in the LBO. These suits have been stayed pending progress in Tribune's efforts to confirm the bankruptcy plan. Judge Carey earlier rejected two earlier versions of Tribune's bankruptcy plan. The company has since submitted a third version of the plan, which is pending court approval. Tribune is in disagreement with its junior bondholders led by hedge fund Aurelius Capital Management on how to treat the potential claims for lawsuits against the parties involved in the LBO. Tribune is the second largest newspaper publisher in the United States. It's listed $13 billion in debt and $7.6 billion in asset when it filed for bankruptcy protection in December 2008. It owns the Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, six other newspapers, and 23 television stations. Julianne Lopez reports about four Chapter 11 debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed: Washington Mutual, Tribune Company, W.R. Grace, and the Nebraska Book. Washington Mutual Incorporated in December agreed to settle to a settlement with some creditors involved in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy case and filed a new reorganization plan. Washington Mutual said in his statement on December 12th that the settlement will allow it to distribute more than $7 billion to its creditors. The settlement must still be approved by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware. Michael Willingham, chairman of the Committee of Equity Security Holders appointed in the company's Chapter 11 proceedings, said the comprehensive settlement represents a fair and reasonable recovery for thousands of equity holders of the company who have been following this case closely for 3 years. Washington Mutual's bankruptcy case is 3 years old and its reorganization plan have twice been rejected by bankruptcy court judge Mary Walrath. The company is hoping to exit bankruptcy protection by the end of February. It has a hearing scheduled for January 11, 2012, in which the bankruptcy court will reconsider approval of the reorganization plan's disclosure statement. The company also plans to ask the bankruptcy court for a mid-February hearing to confirm its reorganization plan. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation seized WaMu's Seattle-based flagship in 2008 and sold its assets to J.P. Morgan for $1.9 billion in the largest bank failure in U.S. history. Under the terms of the settlement, the reorganization assets of Washington Mutual will include equity interest in WMI Investment Corp. and WM Mortgage Reinsurance Company. A reorganized Washington Mutual received $75 million in funding from certain creditors. Exit financing provided by settlement note holders will include $125 million in senior secured credit facility that will be used to fund working capital as well as for general corporate purposes in eligible originations and acquisitions. The majority of the reorganized company's common equity will be distributed to its current preferred and common equity holders. Its board will initially be made up of 4 members chosen by the equity committee and 1 member selected by lenders under the credit agreement. Tribune Company's long-running sojourn in bankruptcy shows no sign of ending soon. Judge Kevin J. Carey said in a ruling that he wouldn't hold a hearing on plans to end the 3-year bankruptcy until May at the earliest. Tribune had been hoping to resolve the case in the next few months. Even if Judge Carey keeps his deadline, it'll probably take months before the media conglomerate to emerge from bankruptcy and obtain needed federal regulatory approval for the transfer of broadcasting and other license into new ownership. Tribune is a parent company of Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune and other newspapers, television, and media properties. The case pits Tribune and its senior creditors, including Oak Tree Capital Management in Los Angeles and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company in New York, against a group of junior bondholders led by hedge fund Aurelius Capital Management in New York. The two sides have battled furiously over their competing plans to reorganize the company. Judge Carey directed the adversaries to try to reach an agreement on scheduled matters with a view toward a confirmation hearing to be held in mid to late May of 2012. The case could end very quickly if the two sides resolve their differences, but the track record of this case suggests that won't happen, said Douglas Baird, a law professor at the University of Chicago. In the order, Judge Carey reversed part of the ruling he made in October that seemed to give an advantage to a deeply subordinate class of note holders known as the Phones. At the time, Judge Carey indicated that the Phones class should be able to recover at least part of the claim with the face value of $1.2 billion, getting its share from money that would otherwise go to Aurelius and other junior creditors. That actually opened the door to a parallel demand from Tribune Chairman Sam Zell, whose affiliate owns a similar note. It was Zell who acquired the company in a highly leveraged buyout in December 27, a deal that landed it in bankruptcy a year later. Judge Carey reversed himself, saying that the phone class was not a par with Aurelius and other junior creditors for purpose of recovering bankruptcy assets. W.R. Grace & Company, whose bankruptcy exit plan is being held up by appeals, says it expects to be struck in its stuck in its decade-long Chapter 11 case past March. The plan, co-proposed by the Official Committee of Asbestos Personal Injury Claimants, the Official Committee of Equity Secure Holders, and the Asbestos Future Claimants, representative appointed to Grace's bankruptcy case, is before the district court pending appeals from various parties, including a group of petition bank lenders and the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors. Grace filed for Chapter 11 reorganization in 2001 to protect itself from more than 100,000 personal injury claims. Nebraska Book Company reviewed the performance of its 183 off-campus bookstores and decided to close 7. Landlords at another 40 locations agreed to extend the deadline until April 30th for the company to decide whether to terminate its leases. The extension gives Nebraska Book more time to negotiate a lower rent. Nebraska Book said that the 170 on-campus stores continue to perform well. The closing stores will operate until February to accommodate demand for the second semester. Earlier, Nebraska Book, faced with violating loan covenants, received approval from the bankruptcy court to loosen terms under the loan agreement financing the Chapter 11 effort. In return, the college bookseller is paying fees and higher interest rates. Financing for the reorganization includes a $75 million revolving credit and a $125 million term loan. As of September 30th, the term loan was fully drawn, although nothing was outstanding on the revolver. At the time, the balance sheet showed $120 million in cash, a court filing says. Nebraska Book negotiated looser cumulative cash flows covenants with the lenders. In return, the lenders were authorized by the bankruptcy court to be paid a 0.25% fee on the aggregate amount of the commitments. In addition, the interest rate rose 1.5 percentage points on both loans. The commitment fee increased 0.5 percentage point to 0.75%. Nebraska Book filed for Chapter 11 in June in Wilmington, Delaware, with an agreement to emerge quickly from reorganization. Court schedules show that the company can't leave Chapter 11 until March 22nd at the earliest. Nebraska Book's prearranged plan didn't work, given its inability to secure $250 million in outside financing. The plan would have paid off first and second lien debt in full while giving most of the new equity to subordinate note holders of the operating company and holders of notes issued by the holding company. The Troubled Company Reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TSR at no cost or obligation. Psych Maricon Castilian reports about 5 companies that issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence pursuant to the plans of reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases in December 2011. They are Dingy Holdings, Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, Lee Enterprises, William Lyon Homes, and TerraStar Corporation. Dingy Holdings LLC and its parent Dingy Incorporated filed a plan of reorganization and an accompanying disclosure statement for Dingy Holdings in early December. Under the terms of the proposed plan for Dingy Holdings, consistent with restructuring support agreement, all creditors holding unsecured obligations of Dingy Holdings, including $3.4 billion of senior notes, $200 million of subordinate notes, and approximately $130 million of accrued interest, and the guarantee obligations associated with Roston and Danskammer leases will receive. One is a $400 million cash payment subject to adjustment as set forth in the plan. Two, a $1.0 $1 billion subject to the adjustment as set forth in the plan of a new 11% senior secured note due 2018 to be issued by Dingy and secured by the equity and assets of certain entities owning the company's separate coal and gas fuel generating businesses, or an equivalent cash payment if the company contains the financing, obtains the financing elsewhere, no less favorable terms, and $2.1 billion of Dingy's new convertible preferred stock. The convertible preferred stock will not be convertible at the option of the holders, but will mandatorily convert into common stock, comprising 97% of Dingy's fully diluted common stock on December 31st, 2015, if not earlier redeemed. Dingy will have the right to redeem the convertible preferred stock subject to certain restrictions at varying discounts through the end of 2013. Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company filed with the court a joint Chapter 11 plan of reorganization and related disclosure statement. Pursuant to the plan, investors are providing new money commitment of $490 million in the form of $210 million face amount of privately placed new second lien notes, $210 million of face amount of privately placed new convertible third lien notes, and an $80 million new equity investment. The proceeds of the new money commitment will allow the debtors to make distribution pursuant to the plan, including paying certain secured creditors in full cash, and will provide a cash pool of $40 million less than the amount distributed pursuant to a so-called substantive consolidation settlement cash pool for distributions to general unsecured creditors. The plan provides for a settlement and compromise of the intercreditor issues relating to whether the liabilities and assets of the debtors should be consolidated for the purpose of distribution under the plan. The bankruptcy court in White Plains, New York, approved a revised disclosure statement explaining the plan on December 20th. The revised disclosure statement said creditors can expect to recover 2.1% to 2.7%. The hearing is considered confirmation of the plan will begin February 6th. The plan was made possible by $490 million in debt and equity financing to be provided by Yucca Pecos Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and Mount Killett Capital Management LP. Confirmation of the plan was simplified when A&P settled the withholders of 79% of the $310 million in second lien notes. In return for being paid in full cash, when the plan is implemented, second lien creditors are dropping their claim for additional interest or a make whole payment. Lee Enterprises and more than 20 affiliated debtors filed for Chapter 11 protection with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in the District of Delaware in December. Concurrent with the petition, the company also filed an amendment joint prepackaged plan of reorganization and related disclosure statement. The plan is the product of an extensive negotiation between the prospective debtors and their existing stakeholders. During the months leading up to the solicitation, the company and its legal financial advisors engaged in extensive negotiations with pre-petition lenders. As of September 8, 2011, Lee Enterprises and the petition lenders holding more than 50% in number and 66.7% in the amount of claims under the pre-petition credit facilities had entered into a support agreement which was amended as of December 2, 2011. The support agreement, among other things, commits the lenders to support restructuring of the company's debt structure. The salient terms of the plan are: first, the maturity of the remaining $127.6 million in 9.05% first lien notes due April of 2012, known as the Pulitzer notes, will be modified and extended. The interest rates on the Pulitzer notes will be raised initially to 10.55%, increasing annually thereafter. Lenders owed $48.2 million under a term loan and $306.6 million under revolving credit will receive 15% of the stock plus a $689.5 million term loan, a $40 million revolving credit not expected to be drawn initially, and a $175 million term loan. Unsecured creditors will be paid in full. Pre-petition trade debt total $10.6 million. Shareholders will retain their stock with minimal dilution. William Lyon Homes and 20 affiliated entities filed for Chapter 11 protection in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in the District of Delaware December 19th. In excess of 97% in dollar amount and in excess of 93% in number of holders of its senior notes that cast ballots, voted to approve a prepackaged joint plan of reorganization, as did the company's senior secured lender. The Lyon family also supports the plan. The plan provides for new capital investment of $85 million and strengthens the company's long-term capital structure by eliminating short-term debt maturities and reducing interest expense. Approximately $180 million in principal amount of debt will be eliminated as part of the recapitalization, resulting in a 37% reduction in overall debt. Annual cash interest expenses will be reduced by nearly $25 million, or approximately 45% of the current levels. Existing senior management will continue managing the company, and the Lyons will remain on board, with General Lyon continuing as chairman. The plan further provides for the Lyon family to invest $25 million in exchange for 20% common equity before dilutive impacts of warrants and warrants for an additional 9.1% of common equity. In addition, the senior secured lender will receive $235 million secured note. Senior note holders will exchange $284 million in principal of existing senior notes for $75 million in secured notes. Senior note holders will also receive 28.5% common equity before dilutive impact of warrants, and the company will propose rights offering for $10 million in common equity and $50 million in new convertible preferred equity. The company has also secured a commitment for a new $30 million credit facility from its senior secured lender, which will be used to support operations and ensure adequate liquidity during the restructuring process. The bankruptcy court scheduled a February 10, 2012 joint hearing to consider both the disclosure statement and the prepackaged joint plan. Interested parties must file objections on or before February 3, 2012. TerraStar Corporation filed with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court a First Amended Joint Chapter 11 Plan and First Amended Disclosure Statement. The plan provides that the holders of the allowed unsecured claims will receive full satisfaction of their claims in the form of new TSC notes. The remaining value of the reorganized TSC debtor will be transferred to holders of TSC Series A and B preferred shares in the form of new common stocks of reorganized TSC. After taking into the account the value distributed to unsecured creditors and assuming that the claims asserted by Eckerbot Incorporated, Van Vlissingen and Company, Jeffries and Company Incorporated, and other vendors are allowed in full, the equity value of reorganized TSC being transferred to the holders of TSC Series A and B preferred shares is between $144.8 million and $154.8 million. While the face value of the interest held by the holders of TSC Series A preferred shares is $90 million and TSC Series B preferred shares is $318.5 million, not including amounts owed on account of earned but unpaid dividends. In the event that the claims asserted by Eckerbot Van Vlissingen and Company and Jeffries and are disallowed in their entity, the equity value of the reorganized TSC being transferred to the holders of TSC Series A and B preferred shares is between $177.2 million and $187.2 million. Accordingly, after repaying the holders of TSC Series and A and B preferred shares, there is simply no value remaining to distribute to any other equity holders. That ends the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for December 2011, brought to you by the editors of Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. If you'd like to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nina Novak at 240-629-3300 or visit bankrupt.com/free trial and we'll add you to the distribution list. That number again is 240-629-3300 and the website again, bankrupt.com/free trial. Tune in to your next monthly restructuring review on February 16th. Thank you for listening.